And the Justice Appropriations Subcommittee will come to order. Rosa, please call the roll.
Chair Brennan?
Here.
Vice Chair Smith?
Here.
Ranking Member Valdez?
Present.
Representatives Beltran?
Here.
Gracie Davis?
Here.
Campbell?
Here.
Duggan?
Here.
Fabricio?
Here.
Fernandez Barquin?
Here.
Gottlieb?
Here.
Jacques?
Here.
Saroy? Snyder?
Here.
Stark, excused. Waldron?
Here.
A quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Rosa. A quorum being present. Welcome everyone this morning. As a reminder, always ensure that your cell phones and other communication devices are turned off, placed on silent. And anyone who wants to speak before the committee, please fill out an appearance card and get it up here to Rosa, and we'll be glad to hear from you. This morning we have six member bills up for consideration, so without further delay, let's jump right to it. First up will be House Bill 1577, Crime Victim Compensation Claims by Representative Alvarez. Good morning. You're recognized.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Vice Chair, Ranking Member, members of the committee. It's an honor to be in front of you. It really is. This is a good bill that allows a waiver in the crime victims.
I think you bring us a bad one.
Well, you know, let me start again. This is a bill I'm very honored and proud to stand in front of you because I think we're going to be doing a lot of good for victims, and we're going to be helping some people out. So this is a bill that allows for a waiver in the crime victims compensation program related to delays that have to do with the DNA and DNA processing. This bill actually creates compliance with the federal law, which is going to require the waiver. Back in 2022, the Federal Victims of Crime Act requires that by March 15th, 2025, anyone that takes funds for victim compensations for their trust funds has to be in compliance with this waiver. So as a quick background, normally my intros are very short, but as a quick background, in the state of Florida administers a victim compensation program that if you're a victim of a crime and you cooperate with the state attorney and the police in order to help find and solve this crime, you can apply to a victim's compensation trust fund. You have 3 years to do that in the state of Florida right now with a 2-year extension for cause, which is rarely or not easily granted. Oftentimes, victims of sexual assault, the proof that they were sexually assaulted comes in the form of a sex rape kit that's administered at the hospital. That ties DNA, clothing, any sort of fluids to it. By the time they tie that DNA to a bad guy, oftentimes the time has told past the 3 to 5 years. That is what we're here to waive, and that is the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Alvarez. I see no amendments. Members, do we have any questions for the sponsor? Ranking Member Valdez, you're recognized.
Thank you very much. Representative Alvarez, thank you very much for bringing this bill forward. As a person who doesn't understand how these proceedings would work, what would that process look like? Can you explain?
Which process exactly?
Thank you. Well, of applying for the waiver or submitting the waiver, how would that work? Would that be through an attorney? How would that?
You're recognized.
Thank you, sir. So normally, Representative, what happens is they'll apply through the state of Florida state attorney program, and then the minute that the crime is acknowledged and that begins to toll the time. So what happens is they'll submit their information through the state of Florida's program, oftentimes with their local state attorney being their liaison.
Thank you. Any other member questions? Questions for the sponsor? Seeing none, we'll now move into public testimony. I have one appearance card. Libby Guzzo, Office of the Attorney General, waves in support. That one. Okay, no one else wishing to speak. Members, we're now in debate. Any members wishing to debate? Seeing no debate, Rep. Alvarez, you are recognized to close on House Bill 1577.
Sir, I wave close.
Having waved close, Rosa call roll.
Chair Brennan?
Here. I'm here and yes.
Vice Chair Smith?
Yes.
Ranking Member Valdez?
Yes.
Representatives Beltran?
Yes.
Gracie Davis?
Yes.
Campbell?
Yes.
Duggan?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fernandez Barquin?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Jacques?
Yes.
Saroy?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Stark? Waldron?
Yes.
14 yeas, 0 nays.
Thank you, Rosa. Members, by your vote, the bill is reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative Alvarez.
Thank you, sir.
Next up is CS for HB 657, Enforcement of School Zone Speed Limits by Representative Coster. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair. I'm glad you're here. Thank you, Chair, Vice Chair Smith, Ranking Member Valdez, Committee. House Bill 657 creates a framework for counties or municipalities who want to better enforce speeding within their school zones. The bill allows counties or municipalities to install speed detection devices in school zones to deter speeding when and where children are present, and limits the operation of these devices to only when children are present. The bill limits citations to drivers going more than 10 miles an hour over a posted speed limit, requires law enforcement review and confirmation before citations are issued, and provides an appeal process for those who believe they've been wrongfully cited. The bill requires signage and 30-day education and warning period to ensure the public's aware of new measures put in place before citations are issued. We also have included in the bill a schedule to allocate where the funds from the citations will go, and includes provisions to protect citizens' rights of privacy. The bill requires counties and municipalities choosing to install these automated speed detection devices in school zones to report to the state the number of tickets issued, numbers paid, dismissed, the location of active systems, and the dates the systems are activated or deactivated. It requires the Florida Highway Safety Motor Vehicles to provide a summary report annually to the governor, the president, the Senate, and the Speaker of the House regarding the use of these devices. It requires clear signage during designating the times that the devices will be enforced, and adds a process for dismissal of a violation if a person affirms she or he did not have care, custody, or control of the motor vehicle at the time of the violation. That is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Coster. Having explained the bill, I see no amendments. Members, do we have any questions? Ranking Member Valdez.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And Rep. Coster, thank you very much for this bill. And I don't know if you've approved the co-sponsorship yet, but I'm glad to do that, to request it. On line 127, I just have a clarification question for this. In school zones, normally we have the flashing lights going, and they're solarly done as well. So it's stated here on line 120, says within 30 minutes after the end of a regularly scheduled school session. Is it your vision that the posting on the little tablet that's listed where the school zone's times are going to be posted, that these times are actually reflected on that time and not just the time in which the school zone is right after school when the kids are dismissing or entering school? Will that half hour be noted, I guess? Do you foresee that our counties would say, let's say that school is out at 2:30, that we say from 2 to 3:30 will be the school zone time, or...
Coster, you reckon?
Do you understand my
question? Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure I do. I'm sorry. The intent, I'll say it this way, and if I don't answer your question, I'm happy to try again. The intent is that while children are present, the automated detection device will be recording and issuing tickets. There will be two levels of speeds that will be enforced. There's one speed when the light is flashing, then there's another speed when the light is not flashing. So, for example, in a school zone, it might be a 45-mile-an-hour speed limit when the light's not flashing. The automated device will only record that driver if you're going 55 miles an hour or faster, 56 miles an hour or faster, when the light's not flashing. When the light is flashing, if let's say it's 20 miles an hour when the light's flashing, the recording device will only record if you're going 31 miles an hour. I hope I'm doing my math right. I'm a lawyer, not an accountant, but 31 miles an hour over. The signage will specifically say that the devices are active during all school hours. So if the school hours are, you know, 8:30 to 3:30, the signage will say that, but it'll also account for the 30 minutes before, 30 minutes after when the light's flashing. That's my understanding of the signage requirements and also the recording activation. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay.
Follow-up, sir?
Yes.
So basically, we are going to be, regardless of the time that school is active, after school, the device will still issue a ticket if there's no children on campus, but you're driving down, it's a school zone. If you're going 10 miles, to use your example of 45 miles an hour, if you go 56 miles an hour during the school zone when kids are not present, that detection device will also issue a ticket?
Yep, cost.
No, unless it's within that 30 minutes after school's dismissed, because I think, you know, in statute, we use those windows. That's when the light's still flashing. So I think the understanding is that, you know, I mean, I don't know about you, but I've sit in car line to pick up my kids, and getting in and out of there within 30 minutes is impossible right. to get every student off the campus. So I think the understanding and the intent is within that 30 minutes after the school day ends, there's probably still kids on campus. So we would still be enforcing it. Thank you.
Thank you. Now move to Rep. Campbell. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for presenting this bill, Representative Coster. My question is, now, will this be once this bill is passed, will this be implemented in every school zone?
Coster.
Thank you, Chair. The cities and municipalities have the option whether or not they want to install these in school zones.
Follow-up.
And so that leads up to my follow-up. Does the cost fall on the municipalities, or does the state appropriate a funding amount towards this initiative?
Representative Coster.
Thank you, Chair. The municipalities will be compensated for the cost of the program through the citation. Part of the citations that are issued will go toward paying the cities and municipalities for the cost of running the program.
Kim?
So just so I'm clear, so pretty much based off of who breaks the law, they're going to be paying, those folks are going to be paying for this pretty much through their payment.
Coster.
Thank you, Chair. Yes.
Representative Gottlieb.
Thank you, Chair. And Rep. Coster, I think it's a great bill. I was just curious to know, and you may not know the answer to this, do you know if there's any federal grant money that a school district could look into to help implement a program such as this?
Representative Coster.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know the answer to that. I'd be happy to look into that, though.
I can. Thank you. That's all I had, Chair.
Good. Anyone else? Any more questions for the sponsor? Okay. Now move into public testimony. I have three cards. Chief John Barkley, representing the Florida Police Chiefs Association. He's the chief of police at Treasure Island, district director for the Florida Police Chiefs Association. He waves in support of this bill. Eric Draper, the Florida Bicycle Association. Thank you, sir. And Jennifer Pritt, executive director of the Florida Police Chiefs Association, waves in support. Seeing no more public testimony, members, we're now in debate. Anyone in debate? Representative Campbell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really think this is a really good bill. The only things that I have concern is one is that the upfront cost to get it up. I know that, you know, violators will be paying for the system, but to get the system in there, I think there should be something that is appropriated from the state so that municipalities who are interested in starting this type of program is put into place. The second thing of it is my concern is the expansive nature of it long after we put this through. I fear that this might become like a thing like they do in D.C. where they have those speed detectors that you don't even know where they're at. And so it goes they go beyond the school zone, and they are giving you tickets left and right. And so that's my only concern. But outside of that, in regards to your bill, I think this is a great idea to kind of help with the numbers. I saw the bill analysis, and I saw how high the stats are. I was quite surprised at that. And so and starting to lower that, I think this is a great step in moving that forward.
Now move to Representative Snyder. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative, for bringing this bill forward. I know as the father of a daughter who's old enough to ride her bike to school, there's nothing that scares me more than some knuckleheaded driver go flying by a school zone, and so I applaud you for what you're doing here today. I also want to say thank you for having such an open-door policy and engaging in the conversation, and as this bill continues to move forward, I would urge that conversation to continue to be had about making the times optional. You know, I understand where we're going with this bill, and I appreciate the flexibility that municipalities have to make it a choice to adopt this or not. My concern is that there could be a bend to political pressure. I know the feeling of growing up in a law enforcement family. You know, speed traps are a problem. And so my concern is that by turning school zones into, you know, in essence, from 8 a.m. until 5 p.m., lowering that that down to a school time could in essence be a disincentivizer for some municipalities to adopt the program because they don't have that flexibility to do a school-by-school basis on when's it a full-time speed zone or for a school that is more off the road where there is no danger of motor vehicles passing or by the kids playing out in the yard. So I just hope that we continue to give our municipalities that full flexibility to adopt a program that works best for them, because I think this should be in every 67 counties, in every municipality in the state, because keeping our kids safe while they're entering and egressing school is a noble task, and so I appreciate your great work on this. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Representative Snyder. We now move to Ranking Member Valdez.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And Representative Koster, thank you so much for this thoughtful piece of legislation. I don't longer sit in car lines because, you know, unless I have to go pick up my grandbabies, which I miss dearly. But yes, I do understand the concern and the need for this during the school zones, specifically in school zones. I hope that I agree with my colleagues on both sides of the aisle to be able to afford the flexibility to the school districts and the municipalities. I think this might be a municipality issue more so than a school district issue, to be able to specify. I don't like Big Brother, right? Always looking up for you and just whatever. But it's still a good bill because of the intent of keeping our children safe, which for me is the most important thing that we do up here. So thank you very much, and I'm glad to vote up on it today.
Anyone else? Representative Valdez, you never know. I thought I was through too, but I got a kindergartner starting next year, so back of those lines. Don't ever say never. Anyone else? No one else in debate. Representative Koster, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you all for your for reaching out with your thoughts, questions, concerns. I am happy to continue working with all of you as we move it through to the next committee stop. I believe the bill balances the safety of our students with important privacy protections for our drivers. We've got education. We've got great signage built into this bill. We've got good reporting requirements. To address one concern, Representative Campbell, the state does preempt these photo enforcements, so this can't expand to other areas without a legislative body approving such expansion. So while I do certainly understand we don't want to operate in the way that we've got recording devices everywhere, I do believe that the limited nature of protecting our students when they're going to and from school warrants this type of legislation. Members, as I said in my last committee, my 7, almost 8-year-old daughter thinks this is a good bill, and with that, I would ask for your support.
Thank you. Rosa, call the roll.
Chair Brannon?
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith?
Yes.
Ranking Member Valdez?
Yes.
Representatives Beltran?
Yes.
Bracy Davis? Campbell?
Yes.
Duggan? Fabricio?
Yes.
Fernandez-Barkin?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Jacques?
No.
Saroy?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Stark? Waldron?
Yes.
11 yeas, 1 nay.
Thank you, Rosa. Members, by your vote, the bill is reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative Koster.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Committee.
Thank you. Next up is House Bill 825, Assault or Battery on Hospital Personnel by Representative Burfield. Good morning, Representative Burfield. You're recognized to explain your bill.
Good morning, and thank you, Mr. Chairman, Vice Chairman, Madam Ranking Member, and committee members. House Bill 825 seeks to better address violence between healthcare professionals and a customer or a patient. Workplace violence is defined as any act or threat of physical violence, harassment, intimidation, or other disruptive behavior that occurs in the workplace. The impact of workplace violence can range from physical issues to psychological or even death. And while there are four types of violence, workplace violence, House Bill 825 focuses on just one. As we all know, hospital settings can create extreme levels of stress for patients, their families and friends, as well as employees for the institution. Whether it be fear, frustration, urgency, illness, or emotional circumstances, these circumstances contribute to the anxiety and aggression from customers or patients. So it's easy to understand why the health industry experienced the highest rates of injuries caused by workplace violence and have a 20% higher chance of being a victim of workplace violence than other industries. As a matter of fact, healthcare workers accounted for 73% of the non-fatal workplace injuries and illnesses due to violence in 2018, and that statistic continues to grow on an annual basis. Considering the data, the fact that hospitals are producing workplace protection programs, spending approximately $429 million on an annual basis, as well as the fact that the Florida legislature has attempted to address the nursing shortage through policy changes, allocating $125 million last year alone, and including healthcare professionals in programs like Hometown Hero housing programs, our logical next step to secure and to protect our return on investment is by protecting these professionals through reclassification of misdemeanors or felony degrees of assault and battery offenses if such events occur by knowingly committed against one of those frontline workers. And I'd like to repeat that. There has to be a knowing action that's taken. We're not talking about individuals who are experiencing a mental health lapse or dementia. The healthcare industry is having a serious issue, and it's a growing problem with violence against our nurses. And so I hope you will join me today in taking the next step to protect them. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Burfield. Rosa, I see no amendments. Members, do we have any questions for the sponsor? Representative Beltran, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you for this bill. I just wanted, you said that this does not affect folks with dementia or mental illness. Is that, can you just explain that a little further, please?
Mr. Recognize. Chairman, thank you. Yes, Representative. So if it's an individual who is in a hospital setting and they have an experience where they've woken up from sleep and there's somebody who's actually a dementia patient and they commit an act, it's not somebody in that situation. We're looking at the individuals who we're seeing more frequently who are coming into the hospital setting where their loved one is in a stabilized environment and they're acting out. So they've, I would just heard about a situation earlier today. I know the nurse is going to be testifying around it, but where good news was actually given to the patient and to their family, and the reaction was out of anger instead of joy. And so that has become a more traditional reaction that our nurses are experiencing as they're trying to provide this care. At the same time that they're having to redirect their attention to individuals like this, it's taking care and attention away from other individuals.
Follow.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm just trying to understand, though, where the is there's an exemption. Can you just show me where in statute or in the bill there's some I understood you to say there was an exemption for people who might be compromised. I just want to...
Mr. Chairman?
There's
no specific exemption. We're just saying that those are not the individuals that we're focused on, because there's an understanding. There's a knowledge and acceptance that those individuals potentially are going to have this type of a situation or acting out. What we're talking about are the individuals who are coming in there, who are in a safe environment. They're the loved one, and they're taking out an aggression on a healthcare practitioner who is assisting somebody in a safe environment.
Thank you for your explanation. Appreciate it.
Any other questions for the sponsor? My dad passed away just a few months ago, but I understand where Representative Beltran's coming from. He's the easiest going fella his whole life, but as his Alzheimer's developed and he got in the hospital, he got all turned around, and he would turn into the meanest person I'd ever seen in my life. I mean, I've seen that with other Alzheimer's patients too, so that may need to be thank you, Representative Beltran, for digging into that a little bit. That may be something we need to look into, because they certainly can get turned around when they get in the hospital and not know what they're doing. Okay, we'll move on to public testimony. I have several appearance cards. First up is Elizabeth Gunn from Baptist Health Jacksonville. Good morning. Thank you for making the trip. My kindergarten that starts next year was born at Baptist South.
So I'm recognized then?
You are recognized.
First of all, I'm sorry for your loss. The loss of your dad.
Thank you.
And would like to say that as the representative described, the bill speaks to knowing behavior. And that is what separates our mental health patients, our dementia patients, patients confused by anesthesia. No one is trying to criminalize behaviors by those who are unable to control or judge that their behavior is out of line. This bill would help us in the industry to have a tool to create a safer workplace environment for those who are delivering care by creating enhanced penalties for those who would assault and batter those people while they are trying to deliver care when they know that what they are doing is wrong. I have been a nurse for 40 years this year. In 40 years, I've never called the police to come take care of a dementia patient or someone who was so separated from reality and their mental health illness that they thought we were trying to hurt them when we were trying to help them. So we never asked for law enforcement to be engaged in those kinds of environments. What this bill would do is when we have individuals who are being, they're not behaving according to the constructs of civil behavior in a public space, and they are making threats against people. Just this weekend, I got a text from my house supervisor telling me that they had an incident where they needed to call security to come and explain the limitations to a patient who was in hospital to receive intravenous antibiotic therapy for an illness that he had, and he was demanding that his pain medications all be administered at one time. First of all, that was an unsafe practice. Second of all, the orders were not written that way, and the nurse could not give them that way, and for him to be threatening her that he would find her, demanding to know her last name, demanding to know where she lived, and these kinds of things, making threats of getting even with her because she would not comply with his demand to have all of his medications administered simultaneously, that is the kind of situation where if I can go in and sit down to that individual and say, you know, there are consequences to this behavior. You have to be in hospital to get your antibiotics. You may not behave that way. That is assault at the very least, and if you actually put your hands on her, it's battery. And that there are penalties for doing that. That is the kind of situation where this bill would be so very useful to those in our industry. And if I may, just one other example. I had a young woman who was studying to be a nurse. She was working as a nursing assistant. She was physically tackled by a patient who was literally throwing a temper tantrum. And in so doing, he injured her neck and shoulder, and she came into my office crying because she couldn't afford to be out of school and she was going to miss clinicals and this was going to put her in a bad place. And she said, I'm not even sure I want to be a nurse anymore. I'm not even sure I want to be a nurse anymore. And while we're working so hard to try to increase the number of caregivers in our state and in our country, to have young people who are so enthusiastic about helping turn away from the profession because they're not sure their workplaces will be safe, I would very much appreciate the support of this committee and this legislature to get this bill on the books. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. We also have Catherine Mitchell from Baptist Health. Good morning.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of this committee. I thank you so much for this opportunity to advocate for your support of this bill. I work for Baptist Health System in Jacksonville, Florida. I've been a nurse for 17 years, and my current role is the nurse manager of a video monitoring unit. Baptist spent over $3 million in August of 2020, to purchase 120 video cameras for use throughout our system. One of the purposes of this of the cameras are to protect staff, whether it be physicians, pharmacists, nurses, associate care providers, physical therapists, at the bedside. Workplace violence is such a real concern for Baptist Health System that we have these 120 cameras for use to help protect staff. So we have associate care providers at a department at Baptist that are watching up to 12 patients at a time to make sure that the staff is safe at the bedside. That's one of the real concerns that we have. There's been so many incidents of combativeness and violence towards healthcare professionals that we made this huge investment to protect our workers. Another situation that I want to tell you about occurred about 2 years ago. We have an oncology unit at Baptist Downtown that is associated with MD Anderson, and we had a 62-year-old male patient that was admitted for a right lower lobe lobectomy to remove the spot on his lung that he had lung cancer in. The gentleman made through surgery. He was about 24 hours post-op, and again, related to pain medication, which is a lot of times that violence is used against healthcare professionals, he attacked three nurses at the bedside. There was a nurse that was administering medication. Two other nurses came in to check on him, and he assaulted all three nurses. He broke one of the nurses' arms. He immediately suffered a cardiac arrest, so he collapsed on the floor. The three nurses that had just been assaulted by this patient then had to resuscitate him. They were successful in the resuscitation. He was transferred to ICU. He survived the event. He was then transferred back to the same floor that he had assaulted these three nurses. It was a traumatic event for all of the staff on an oncology floor. These three nurses all left the workforce within a year. And I've kept in touch with them, and when we had meetings and interviews and got them therapy, they all said, we can no longer take care of patients that harm us. And they are now out of nursing completely. All three of those nurses have been nurses for around 10 to 15 years, and so Baptist Health System lost three experienced as nurses due to this violence of this patient. I understand your concerns that you brought up, Representative. This patient that I'm speaking about was alert and oriented times three. He had no known medical, psychiatric illnesses. He was simply upset about the pain medication regimen. And that's a daily occurrence in our workplace.
Thank you. Natalie King, Advent Health. Thank you. Joni Hunt, Halifax Health. Allison Dudley, representing the Florida Radiological Association or Society. Thank you, ma'am. Lindy Kennedy, Safety Net Hospital Alliance. Thank you. Kelly Smith, Nemours Children's Hospital. Thank you. David Micah, Florida Hospital Association. Morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate the consideration of the bill today. I don't get often to see this committee in the hospital industry, so glad to be here with you all today. First, I'd be remiss if I didn't thank Representative Burfield for hard work on this. Real quickly, sir, to some of the good points that have been made today, this already exists in law for the emergency departments. And so what we want to see is some equity, so when the patients move from emergency department up to the second floor to surgery unit, that, you know, we're treating our nurses the same way. Additionally, you know, I think it's a valid point of that sword versus shield aspect of the law that's provided. I can tell you with certainty from what I've heard from the nurses within our hospitals that this is not being used as a sword. In most cases, they're not even reporting. What we want to do is try and give them some equity, A, first, across the different units of our hospital, but B, a strong signal to them that we care about the work that they're doing. Again, I want to ask for your favorable support, and I thank Representative Burfield for this good bill. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next up is James McFadden, Tenet Healthcare Corporation. Waves in support. Aaron Ballas, Florida Nurses Association. Thank you. And Jason Rodriguez, representing BayCare. Waves in support. Okay, members, we're now in debate. Anyone in debate? Representative Beltran, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, Rep, for this bill. I just want to clarify based on, I guess, responses to the questions I asked. I'm not suggesting I'm concerned about this or that there needs to be an exemption. I was just trying to understand what was in the bill, because you mentioned that you weren't targeting folks who may have a diminished capacity. Although if they do something, that's still a problem. So we obviously need to be able to address that as well, because we don't want nurses or other personnel to be injured regardless of whether some person may have a diminished capacity or not, or they're just in there and they're angry. So if we want to distinguish between folks who are of sound mind and not sound mind, you know, I leave it to the sponsor. I'm not expressing an opinion on whether we should do that, but happy to work with you on language to do that. But I was just trying to understand what was in the bill. It's not necessarily a matter of concern, and obviously it would trust the prosecutors and law enforcement to exercise judgment as well. So with that, I'll be up on the bill. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Beltran. Anyone else in debate? I don't know if it was you. You're pointing at him. You're pointing at him. Representative Gottlieb, go ahead.
I'll go first. So I'm cautiously optimistic that this bill will land in the right place. I'm up on it today. I had a very hard time and voted down on a bill like this to add additional criminal penalties when someone hits a criminal defense lawyer. I'm a criminal defense lawyer. I have had several of these cases, and it becomes an affirmative defense for the person who's in the hospital to say that they were going through a mental health event at the time and they hit or touched the employee because it was a mental health event, as opposed to them being angry or otherwise dissatisfied with the level of care. I support the policy, and I support it. I believe it's Rep. Maney's bill, the other bill. It's just I'm fighting one case now for 3 years, and the person's not even loses his competency every other month, and clearly wasn't competent at that time in the hospital. So it is I understand and echo the concerns from the back row. And just hope that with policies like this, that we are being cautious when we prosecute these individuals who are acting not out of their right mind, and that we're not recriminalizing mental health. But again, I'll support it today.
Thank you, sir. Recommend Valdez.
Thank you very much, Chair. And as a early co-sponsor of this bill, I appreciate the intent of this bill. And I want us to be very cautious, because the folks that came to testify to the nurses, thank you for your years of service and for hanging in there in that profession. It's a beautiful profession, and it's also a taxing one, I know. I too have nurses in my family, and I know the hard work that you do. And I want us to be careful, though, that we, because oftentimes, I don't know if most of you don't know this, but I was a practice administrator. And most of the patients that we would see were those of the working poor, and some of those cancer patients as well that needed medication, and some of them were pain medications. And one of the things is that I want us to be very cautious about is that we don't categorize people who are in pain as drug seekers. That's kind of offensive, because all of us have different levels of pain tolerances. So we have to be careful. I'm sorry that the hospital administration or the charge nurse in that case that you described didn't see the vision of why would I put that same patient back on the same floor that they were assaulted in. That doesn't make sense to me. So that was poor administrative decision making. So I just wanted to put on the record that we must be cautious as to how we really look at people who are in pain. It's very difficult to charge a person's pain and to really adequately say, yeah, they're making it up or not, because we are not in that skin. We are not in that body. Just look at labor. Women have different levels of tolerances of pain. Some want that epidural the moment that it happens, you know, the first pain, I want. Others do not. So let's be careful of how we talk about this specific bill and not label folks that, you know, are in pain as drug seekers, because that is definitely not the case. So thank you very much, and I'm up on this bill.
Thank you. Well, that's closed debate. Representative Burfield, you recognize the close on House Bill 825.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you to all the members for your input and your suggestions or recommendations. I would tell you that I think the one thing that we need to keep in mind is for a lot of these patients, especially those who are in pain situations, they're given actual care plans where they actually chart out how, if they get into a situation, they're going to de-escalate a situation, number one, or they're going to manage that care around pain. So if there was something that was misspoken, I would apologize for that. But I think we need to understand there are stages or phases that are put into place to make sure that we are managing those individuals to the very best of our ability. I think the other thing I would share with you is that in a lot of situations, we're not talking about specifically those people. We're talking about family members, which to me, I think, was the shocking part. When you tell me, I have a CEO who comes into my office and says, last week, I just lost two nurses. They've been with our hospital for 20 years each. An individual got upset because he did not like the news that his mother was given. He decided to pull back and slug her. The lady went back, hit her head on the floor, ended up with a concussion at the end of her shift, and the other nurse who was in the room with her, they both chose to write a letter of resignation. And at a time when we're trying to fulfill a need, if we can give some small level of protection, I think that that's critical. But I respect the input that has been given, and we'll continue to work with you all as we move to the floor and make sure that this is the best piece of legislation possible for those that we're looking to protect. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Burfield, having closed on her bill, Rosa, please call the roll.
Chair Brennan?
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith?
Yes.
Ranking Member Valdez?
Yes.
Representatives Beltran?
Yes.
Bracy Davis? Campbell?
Yes.
Duggan?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fernandez-Barquin?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Jacques?
Yes.
Saroy? Snyder?
Yes.
Stark? Waldron?
Yes.
13 yays, 0 nays.
Thank you, Rosa. By your vote, the bill is reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Next up is House Bill 1227, Problem-Solving Courts, by Representative Maney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for scheduling this bill, Vice Chairman, Ranking Member. This is a real simple bill. It's not complicated. That's why it's simple. It's short. That's because I'm an infantryman. Can't do long bills. No, seriously. This is a simple bill that simply harmonizes the processes in problem-solving courts in Florida. We started off, as you may know, with mental health courts and then drug courts and now veteran treatment courts. And over time, as they've developed, the processes in the different courts are not the same. This is a bill that the Office of State Court Administrator would like to pass to harmonize those processes and be more efficient. I can go into the details if anyone's interested, other than what's in the bill analysis, but I would point out the final sentence or paragraph says, this bill may have an indeterminate fiscal impact to OSCA. It is anticipated that any initial impact to workload could be handled within existing resources. That is the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir. We have no amendments. Members, do you have any questions, Representative Maney? No questions? Now moving to public testimony. I have Sean Burnfin, State Court System, waves in support. Aaron Waite, Florida Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers, also waving in support. Members, we're now in debate. Seeing no debate, Representative Maney, you're recognized to close on House Bill 1227.
Wave closed, Mr. Chairman.
Sir, Rosa, please call the roll.
Chair Brennan?
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith?
Yes.
Ranking Member Valdez?
Yes.
Representatives Beltran?
Yes.
Bracy Davis? Campbell?
Yes.
Duggan?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fernandez Barquin?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Jacques?
Yes.
Saroy? Snyder?
Yes.
Stark? Waldron?
Yes.
12 yeas, zero nays.
Thank you, Rosa. By your vote, the bill is reported favorably. Congratulations, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Committee.
You're welcome. Next up is House Bill 1105, Rapid DNA Grant Program, by Representative Temple. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair, and Vice Chair, and Ranking Member. I have a simple bill as well. 1105, it creates the Rapid DNA Grant Program within FDLE to annually award funds received from the federal government and pay appropriations specific to the grant program to county jails, sheriff's office, to procure rapid DNA machines and other necessary supplies required to rapidly process DNA samples in support of the statewide DNA database. This bill appropriates a non-reoccurring sum of $200,000 for the 23-24 fiscal year from the General Revenue Fund to FDLE to implement the Rapid DNA Grant Program. That is the bill.
Thank you, sir. No amendments. Members, do we have any questions for the presenter or the representative? Representative Snyder, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the bill, Representative. What does DNA stand for?
You're recognized. You say it.
Oh.
That's fine. That's fine. We appreciate it. I don't know if I can say it either, but I know what it is. I know what it is.
Oh, here it is. Pronouncing the first part. I'll get it back to you.
I thought you were. Weren't you a teacher?
I was. I taught math, not science.
Okay, so. Gotcha. All right, any other questions? Hey, Representative Valdez, go ahead.
Hi, my colleagues. I got to tell you. So the $200,000 in non-recurring, dollars, how will this be sustained moving forward?
Well, this is a pilot, and so we want to get it out there and see the success from it. And so I imagine that we will receive a report back saying the process and how well it's worked, and then be able to come back and say, look how great it worked, and then we would ask for more at that time.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Any other questions? Seeing none, we'll now move to public testimony. We have Matthew Dunnigan representing the Florida Sheriff's Association. Waving in support. Thank you, sir. Now in debate, members. Anybody in debate? Seeing none, Representative Temple, you're recognized to close on House Bill 1105.
Wave close.
Thank you, sir. Having closed on the bill, Rosa, please call our roll.
Chair Brennan?
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith?
Yes.
Ranking Member Valdez?
Yes.
Representatives Beltran?
Yes.
Bracy Davis? Campbell?
Yes.
Duggan?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fernandez Barquin?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Jacques?
Yes.
Saroy? Snyder?
Yes.
Stark? Waldron?
Yes.
12 yeas, zero nays.
By your vote, the bill is reported favorably. Thank you, sir. Good practice that D word. Next up is House Bill 889. Theft, hooked on phonics. Theft from nonprofit. They're from nonprofit organizations by Representative Williams. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. I don't think your microphone's on. There we go.
Much better.
There you go.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, Ranking Member, CS for HB 889, theft for nonprofit organization, would help hold accountable those who steal from nonprofit organizations by making the punishment stronger. This bill would enhance the penalty by reducing the threshold amount of $50,000 or more to a first-degree felony, $10,000 to $50,000 a second-degree felony, and $300,000 to $10,000 a third-degree felony. Mr. Chair, plain and simple, that's the bill.
Thank you for that plain and simple explanation. I see no amendments. Members, do we have any questions for the sponsor? No questions? No public testimony. Members, we are now in debate. No debate. Representative Williams, you are recognized to close on CS for HB 889.
Mr. Chair, ways close.
Thank you for that. Rosa, please call the roll.
Chair Brannon?
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith?
Yes.
Ranking Member Valdez?
Yes.
Representatives Beltran?
Yes.
Gracie Davis? Campbell?
Yes.
Duggan?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fernandez Barquin? Yes. Gottlieb?
Yes.
Jacques?
Yes.
Saroy?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Stark? Waldron?
Yes.
13 yeas, 0 nays.
Thank you, Rosa. By your vote, the bill is reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Have a good day. All right, members, that concludes today's agenda. If there's no other business which should be properly presented, Representative Waldron moves we rise, and without objection, we are adjourned.